It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome to 2015 and the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown, and we have a very special three-hour program ahead of us today. In this hour, we're going to be looking at the subject of security, or you might say the subject of insecurity that we've experienced during 2014, certainly, on the Internet. But there are some answers out there. Richard Steenitz is going to be with us in studio to talk about that, along with a colleague of his who has a brand new way of stopping the bad guys. This hour of the Internet Advisor. Welcome once again to a brand new year, 2015. I'm Foster Brown, the co-host of this program, heading into our 18th year with my friend, Mr. Gary Baker. How you doing, Gary?
Hey, it's great to be here in 2015.
Oh, my word. We made it. You could have pinched me. Never would have believed we'd have gotten this far.
And we've got a whole month to wait before our 17th anniversary. Can you believe it? They've led us on for 16 years and
Yikes.
11 months.
Wow. That's right. Whew. Some toll. As a matter of fact, we're going to be having, I hope, somebody very special on for that. We're going to see if we can get them. I'll leave it as a surprise. Eddie Rudell, good to have you here, too.
Always great to be here, Foster.
Fought your way in from northern Oakland County where they had a little bit of snow.
A little bit of snow, icy roads. You know, the dirt roads or the gravel roads are worse. You know, you think paved roads are bad. You haven't been on muddy roads when they freeze over.
It's like Cal, an ice rink. A little closer in. Good to have you here, Cal Carson.
Does it bother the horse's hooves?
Hey, Amish Ed.
I put chains on him.
You know, I can't believe you guys have been on the air that long. You know, I didn't even know radio has been on.
Oh, get out of here. You know, we were latecomers to that.
I wish I would have been older so I could have been here when it started. Yeah. But, you know, still in diapers.
All right. And also in studio with us, Richard Steenitz. Richard, good to have you back in here.
Great to be here, as always.
Yes, yeah. Author, international commentator on security, runs IT Harvest. You can go to itharvest.com. We have links to that on our homepage and find out more about his company. We'll be talking about security with him during this hour. And our man, not in Havana, but I think he's still in Key West, Mike Brennan.
Keys. I'm in the Northern Keys now. I'm heading back to Miami. I have to fly back to the icebox on Tuesday.
So. Oh, man. We're going to be having it turned down just for you.
Yeah.
it's 82 degrees here, and I'm sitting on the back deck, so I just had to throw that out.
Thank you very much. I tell you what.
Well, you know.
Mike Brennan is the editor of MI Tech News, and you can get that by simply going to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, scrolling down and subscribing. What do you get for that? For absolutely nothing? You get a world of all sorts of headlines from around the state and the world on technology, innovation, and entrepreneurship. And Mike, as an example, by the way, for free, along with a lot of other things we'll talk about. But Mike, this week, let's talk about some of your headlines. I see the Internet of Things. There's a prediction for that for 2015.
Yeah, you know, there's so many things that are going to be hooked up to the Internet because they all have IP addresses, everything from, gosh, your washing machine to your refrigerator to your corporate network. And so what IDC is coming out and saying, it's getting really, really complicated for CIOs. So everything's going to move to the cloud, and the cloud's going to manage all this because of all these different ways of connecting. They also, getting back to security, they also said that on the Internet of Things, within 2 years, they expect to have a major security breach because that's, you know, the bad guys know that's where everybody's going, right?
Right. So. And was there, I think with the Target hack this last year, it was through a mechanical interface, I think, that they got into the system. So this Internet of Things could prove to be very, like the Achilles heel in the system, if you will. Your second article I underlined here was that 2014 was a terrible year for computer security, to say the least.
Oh, yeah. 56 million credit card numbers, 53 million email addresses. That's just from Home Depot. I mean, if you go into, if you wade into all this, it's pretty scary. I mean, there's a lot of very organized crime elements out there that Richard, I'm sure, will discuss later. And there's some others out there, but mostly it's just plain old organized crime that's figured this out. This is where the money is. You know, Willie Sutton robbed banks while the organized crime is robbing the internet.
Yeah, matter of fact, Ed and I had a conversation as we were preparing for the show, and I'm going to hopefully uncork that in the second section of our program with Richard Steen, who's with us in studio here, talking about the threat against the individual. In light of that. Okay, the third thing here I see is here, Michipreneur.com has a great story they posted about 12 Michigan innovation stories.
Yeah, Amanda summed up what she thought was her top stories, and right at the top is Hemming Wright Tool, and then Magic Book, and Crib Spot, and Young Village, and all the rest of them are listed there, but these are all Michigan technologies that were developed, many of them downtown Detroit technologies, right, as it were. And so it's a great article if you want to get caught up on all the really cool things happening in Michigan with all of our smart entrepreneurs out there. You can find it all listed there in that article.
Well, Mike Brennan, that's a good plug for me to get in here to say that when you get MI Tech News delivered to you every Friday, you get not only these headlines, you also get a great audio resources and some video resources as well. So there's links to the podcast from IT and the D and from our complete Internet Advisor podcast, along with a lot of other resources that are there. So you're not just getting these headlines, you're getting a wealth of information, absolutely free, delivered to you directly to your email address. And how do you get that? Simply go to internetadvisor.net, scroll down the page to the Subscribe Me Right Now button, and click on that, and you are on your way. And Mike, this last year of 2014 was a big year for alliances for you. We were talking about IT and the D now is hooked up with MI Tech News.
Huge. They have a huge audience worldwide. It's just phenomenal numbers. And then we also have Tech 248 out of Oakland County. We haven't got all the details worked out on that. We just announced it last month. But we'll be working really closely with Oakland County government, Automation Alley. So we're trying to corner the market on technology coverage in our group, which we have yet to name. We haven't come up with a really great name yet, but we will, right?
Absolutely. So MI Tech News really represents both Mike's, well, how many years is it now, 30 years that you've been covering technology in Michigan?
Well, in Michigan, 18, but total 35.
That's what I was thinking of. 35 years of covering technology as a reporter, and now kind of as the head of a whole new network of information, and you can tap into that with mitechnews.com. Absolutely free. Please do that today. Check it out on our homepage, internetadvisor.net. Mike Brennan.
Hey, may I throw out one real quick plug? Richard can address this. Richard and I are beginning to work on the sequel to Cyber Stiletto. We can't tell you the plot line yet because it's too scary to contemplate.
All right. We'll have to check that out with him coming up this next
time. Haven't figured it out yet.
No. We got to figure it out. I actually been doing some work.
Come on home, Mike. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. If you happen to kind of catch us as you're rolling down the road or just skimming the dial or kind of, you know, chilling out on this extended New Year's weekend, we are a program that's been around for now 17 years, and we've been handing out advice to people about their computers. That's how we started out, but we've expanded as well to look at some of the bigger picture items that are out there and also some of the neat people who are doing things on the internet or in the digital world. And as you may have heard this last hour, when we began the hour, some of the headlines that Mike Brennan had at MI Tech News had to do with security. And I would go as far as to say that 2014 for me, in many years, was the year of the hack, capital letters. Let's bring our guest who is going to be with us for this hour into the studio now and into the spotlight, if you will. Richard Steen is with us. Richard, good to have you back again.
Great to be here, as always, Foster.
Richard is our local security expert, not just local, but you're involved very much in terms of, as president of IT Harvest, you are kind of at a place of gathering all that information from around the world and your colleagues about security.
Yeah, I mean, that's all I do every day, you know, throughout the year, is talk to people about their security or talk to vendors about their solutions for it. And I try and get as involved as I can with the policymakers who are trying to figure out, you know, what are they going to do about this.
So did we see more hacks this last year, or were they just bigger? It seemed like
the numbers are bigger for breaches.
Yeah, every year it seems like we're saying, okay, this was the year of the breach.
Yeah, actually,
and
I
next
saw a
year
review
will be
article.
The year of the breach.
I saw a review article that showed every year who said it, this was the year of the breach. And for the last 3 years running, some major online news site has said this is the year of the breach. So for sure, 2015 is going to be the year of the breach.
Well, I have a dark theory on that I want to get to. But, just in Mike's report coming out of San Francisco, Home Depot, J.P. Morgan, Target, there were more than that. I think
there were a lot more.
Sony, good Lord, Sony, that colossal hit there. Huge numbers that have been, I think it's the numbers that have numbed us. And the last one from Sony, and I get you guys' reaction to this. My sense, the thing that underlined it for me was the completeness of the hack. It wasn't just emails or it was everything. This took their servers and dumped it into a paste bin.
100 terabytes of data that they claim they stole, and we've seen evidence that they have a lot of emails. They've obviously got full feature-length movies that they've stolen and released.
Movie ideas, contracts, personal notes back and forth. I mean, can you guys, Ed and Cal, can you imagine that happening, for instance, at GM where you are?
Yeah, but it would be so boring because Ed and I's mail has nothing exciting at all in it.
Well, and Richard, I'm curious because you would think that they would have had to steal a lot of passwords to be able to get into those servers because they should all be segmented, right? Those should all be different servers, different passwords.
He's grinning.
That wouldn't be best practice to use kind of.
Well, the trouble
Grandma
is...
Grandma 1 is your password for everything,
The trouble is on Windows-based enterprises, which is 99% of all enterprises, they're totally vulnerable to something called pass the hash. So all you need is one password of a domain administrator, and you get into that system, and then you just pass the hash. You use the last time they logged in to get to the rest of the servers. So you just keep moving.
Scary. That's scary. Is it fair to say, though, that we have really seen a different kind? I think Mike was talking about it, that this is like the cartels get level.
Yeah.
This is like organized crime level.
Well, this was the way it played out seems to be an evolution of what happened to Stratfor a couple years ago and H.B. Gary. So those were technology companies that got the attention of Anonymous, and guys just got in, got to their servers, and then started leaking everything. So it's like that, but it's targeted for a real specific purpose, right? Do damage to Sony.
Do we have that same sort of vulnerability on servers that are Unix-based?
Absolutely. If they're protected by passwords. So not the pass-the-hash kind of vulnerability, but once you get the passwords. And unfortunately, with all the Unix servers, everybody tends to use standard default passwords inside the organization. They don't change them very often because so many people are touching them.
Now, Richard, you deal on the international level. I mean, is there an international awareness that we got to do something else? Is there kind of a concerted plan for... at these top levels, guarding themselves?
So there's attempts, so back in about 2003, there was actually a cybercrime treaty that was created. And then pretty much all of the Western nations have signed up to it. And all of the opposing nations, in particular China and Russia, have objected to it because it sure sounded like they were, treading on their sovereignty. And, of course, they want to control their own internet for their own people. Mm-hmm. So we've only had 11 years of trying to get that to happen. And then each country has come up with their own cyber strategy, which is, like ours, worded very high level and no actual details about what to do. So, we're working on it. But the biggest development of all was Sony, right? So of all the talk of nation state attacking, and we've certainly had China involved in cyber espionage around the world, the U.S., like yesterday or the day before, actually imposed sanctions on North Korean members of their army. And that's the first time anyone's ever applied international sanctions for a cyber attack. So history was made.
So how do we know it was them?
Big debate.
It was somebody that was just, that was sympathetic to...
Sure, or an insider, or a combination. An insider had the stuff and passed it off to cyber criminals, who passed it off to whatever. Most of my peers are coming down on, no, the FBI doesn't know what they're doing. Because if you've ever worked with the FBI, you don't really feel comfortable with their technical savvy. But the FBI, the first time that the FBI has ever attributed an attack to a nation, right? So they've done the original sequester of people in China. But this is the first time they said this attack came from that country and we're going to take action. And they cited other security, national intelligence resources.
They've never been wrong.
Well, you're saying your colleagues are saying we don't believe that.
Tongue in cheek.
Yes,
yeah. But I am, I've stopped doubting the U.S. government's ability to do hacking because we do know that they've got access to most of the information that passes across the cable networks, undersea cables. Mm-hmm. And that would give them the ability to finally have true attribution. And if they use that in this, which apparently that's what they're claiming they did, they've been tracking the perpetrators for years and years, and they're saying these same guys did it.
Ed, how do they move or copy 100 terabyte of data without anyone knowing about it? I mean, you would think that they have to go inside the corporation's network. You would think that they would have just pegged their network and brought it down to its knees. As all this data is flying out of the corporation, certainly there must have been some bells and whistles going off.
And all different servers.
All different servers.
Yeah. Apparently, since all the leaked files have the same time and dates on them, mm-hmm. they were probably stored on a single server. So as they collected it, they stored it in one place. I would say that they would have encrypted it. And then just streamed it out because, we're talking about Sony Pictures. File transfers are pretty normal.
You would have not seen the capacity grow on that server?
Oh, gosh, yeah. If they were doing any monitoring, anybody would have been.
That's the question.
Obviously, and we actually know about their security because one of the leaked documents was PricewaterhouseCoopers' audit of their security.
Oh, jeez.
And just from reading between the lines, you realize that their security is real old school. We're doing SIM. We're monitoring various.
They
devices.
Hadn't paid attention to warnings that had been given to them, had they? And they had the PlayStation. Well, the PlayStation hack had happened earlier in the year.
PlayStation hack. They got their first CISO after the PlayStation hack, which actually occurred a couple of years before. But in February, an attack against one of their distributors or something, theaters in Brazil, they decided to ignore because, they just lost emails and there's no law saying that they had to tell people about it. So they've been having problems all summer long.
Cal, before we go to the break, you have a question?
Well, there was no saying that whatever a man can create, a man can break. So how do you encrypt something that no one can de-encrypt?
Yeah, we've got some really good encryption. There is definitely encryption that at least the community believes.
That's a positive note that I want to get to in just a minute. We're going to be going to a break shortly. So, Rich, after the break, let's come back and talk about some of the things we can do to protect ourselves. And in particular, we've got somebody coming in who is, matter of fact, you know him very well. We're talking about security and personal security. And Ridgely Evers will be with us to talk about Trustpipe, where for $5 a year, you can really heave a sigh of relief and know that you're well taken care of. All that continuing on this first hour of 3 hours of a special Internet Advisor. My name is Foster Brown. Thank you for so much for joining us on this brand new year, 2015. Thank you for joining us here for this is just hour number one. We've got 3 hours of the Internet Advisor this afternoon. And by the way, when it's all said and done on Sunday nights, I post the podcast, and you can choose to listen to just certain segments of the program because we break them down into a little smaller units you can use. You can download it and have it on your phone or download it to your computer at your house and just play it back piece by piece that way if you'd like. Again, that's at internetadvisor.net. After Sunday night, we post the podcasts. Now, by the way, this is with 2015 just starting, of course, time for predictions, and I will be posting the entire group of predictions from our staff here for 2015. Rick Broida, who was our gadget guy, couldn't be with us today, but one of the things that he is looking ahead at 2015 and saying is, he said, I think, or at least hope, that Chromebooks and large tablets will start to catch on in a bigger way as people like me, that's Rick Broida, desperately look for a Windows alternative. He really doesn't like Windows. Windows 10 will be more of the same from Microsoft. A few tweaks that nobody really cares about and a price tag that's totally out of touch with reality. He says a lot in that one prediction. That's Rick Broida. And we'll be posting a lot of predictions throughout the show. I'm Foster Brown, and this is a very special edition of the Internet Advisor, our first one of 2015, and also a three-hour program. This hour, we're talking about security, and we're going to rejoin Richard Steenen of IT Harvest
Ed, Cal, and Gary are in studio here, and we also have Ridgely Evers online, who is with the Trust Pipe Company. We're going to find out what his magic sauce is in just a moment. We've asked all of our folks here, by the way, to give us their predictions for 2015, and one of the ones Cal came up with was about wearables. And he likes the Mac platform in particular, and he says the Apple Watch, while being functional as well as stylish, will be aggressively priced, and people, especially the Android complainers, will really fuss about that. The device will be more jewelry with tech than tech with jewelry, and it will be the subtle justification for the price. He says, I can't wait to hear Johnny Ive describe this one.
Well, you know, that reportedly coming in at over $300 and me wearing my Pivotal Living Band that I bought for $12, you know, there's a wide spectrum there. But you know what's interesting is that there is already talk, before the Apple Watch has even come out, there's talk about Glance, which is their new way of describing microbursts of news. And we thought Twitter was really short. Well, now they're talking about Glance, where you just, you know, just wiggle your wrist and you'll get another burst of news.
Information, whatever that
and
information is.
It's kind of interesting. And we're already talking about it. People are really jumping on the bandwagon. I have no doubt that Apple Watch is going to be successful.
Well, I'm sure we'll be talking more about that in the second hour and the third hour as well. Right now we're talking about security. And originally, as we were closing out this last segment, we talked about the existing ways that security is handled, getting the bad guys or preventing them from coming in. And you said one way was signatures. In other words, that there was a certain way that the bad guys identified, the virus that was identified, and they could read that. Or heuristics, which is about behavior. Now, you said you've got a third way. So what's the magic in your third way?
Well, the magic in our third way, it really ties back to what our underlying premise is, which is that whether you're a corporation or a government or somebody at home, what you really want to be is safe. You don't really care about understanding who shot at you or what the size of the exit wound was. You want to be not shot in the first
place. Exactly, yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And the security industry has really evolved over time much more towards what we call forensics as opposed to prevention.
Mm-hmm.
And our thesis was that those two basic models, signatures and heuristics, were intrinsically flawed. And Kanan's insight was that there was a different way to analyze data. And we have a very important patent around that. And essentially, the way I like to describe it is to say, is to think about DNA, you know, and mice. Suppose you have a policy that you want no mice in your kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the signature-based model says, every creature that comes in, I need to take out their DNA and I need to look at all of it and say, does this match this mouse and this mouse and this mouse and this mouse and this mouse? Mm-hmm. So it's a long list and a lot of data to compare.
Right.
The heuristic model says, is it mousy? Right? Yes, basically.
Walks like a mouse,
and
squeaks
if it's
like
mousy,
a mouse.
Hey, you should take a look because, you know, in the signature model, if I spot something that's absolutely a mouse, I can say, no, out.
Yep.
Right? It's absolutely confident. But if that mouse, you know, mutates a little bit, suddenly I can't see it.
Right.
If it's on a heuristics model, it's ishy, mouse-ish, and so I can't take action on your behalf.
Mm-hmm.
I have to call you in to say, hey, look at this and make a decision.
So you identify kind of a suspicion level.
Exactly.
I gotcha.
And unless you're really, really, really mouse-averse, you know, it's okay for your dog to come in the kitchen, but it has mousy attributes. It's got 4 feet, and it's got a tail, and it's
right,
got
whiskers,
ears, and a pointy nose, and yeah. You know, so both of those models have intrinsic flaws. What we figured out, though, is that just as is the case in DNA, there are distinctive markers in network traffic that absolutely authoritatively define it. So, for example, if I looked at all the DNA for all the different types of mice, it would turn out that there are only a handful of base pairs in the genes that authoritatively say this is a member of the mouse family.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody? Yeah. And those are the markers.
All I have to do is look at the DNA and say, are those markers present? I don't have to examine the whole string or anything else to say, are those markers present? If they are, this is a mouse. And if they aren't, it can't be a mouse.
Okay.
And we can do the same thing with network traffic.
Ah, okay. So right?
Is this an attack? Mm-hmm. Is this a virus? Is this an escalation of privileges? Is this reconnaissance? All the different tools that the hackers use in the hacker toolkit to come in over your network, we have trained TrustPipe on. And here's where it gets really interesting. If you own one of the main antivirus programs, mm-hmm. the database that's on your machine is about 350 megabytes in size.
Yeah, true.
And it's updated constantly, and mm-hmm, when it runs, it grinds your computer to a halt, which is one of the ways they prevent bad things from happening, is you just can't use it.
Often that's true.
Right. So we trained TrustPipe using terabytes of virus information, over 50 million different viruses, and TrustPipe came back and said, you know what, there are actually 13 kinds of virus. Out of these 50 million, there are 13 families. And all the others are just variants within those families.
And that's the base DNA you're talking about, right?
Well, here's the base DNA. TrustPipe came back and said, by the way, I can identify every member of every family in 415 bytes of data.
Oh, my Lord. 415 bytes.
Correct.
That's not even a megabyte. I mean, folks, this is tiny.
415 bytes.
Wow. How long has this been going on? By the way, we're talking with Ridgely Evers about TrustPipe. So how long have you been doing this? Why haven't we heard about you before?
We've been working on this since 2010.
Okay.
And we've kept it very, very quiet because the claims, as Richard will attest, the claims are provocative.
Right.
So,
Ed? And so we wanted to make absolutely certain that what we were saying was true.
Now, you know, looking or the way you're describing it is almost following a suspicion that I've had about the programming and how viruses work on the network, is that they really don't follow the rules as far as network protocols or how to follow the coding within the operating system. So as far as network rules, I mean, to me, it almost sounds like what you're saying is that they're actually putting data on the network that doesn't follow the protocols of network packets. I mean, that's how I translate what you're saying.
Well, interestingly, TrustPipe doesn't understand the concept of a virus. It doesn't understand the concept of a remote root compromise. It doesn't understand any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
All it understands is, here's a body of data that was classified by experts as having something in common. And now I, TrustPipe, have gone out and figured out from a purely digital perspective, as opposed to the analog perspective that humans use, what it is that binds this set together.
Now, I have to ask you, because we're getting near the end of this and I don't want to lose this, is this available now to our listeners?
It's available for Windows XP.
Okay.
At TrustPipe.com. And we'll be rolling out versions for basically every operating system, including all the subsequent versions of Windows, over the coming months.
So if you go to the site right now, you can simply put in your email address, as I did, and you will then receive an email when that system is ready. And then it's
correct,
literally $5 for 5 years of this kind of protection. Ridgely, I'm sorry we've run out of time now, but I want to definitely keep on following this up with you and, Richard, with you as well in the coming year.
I would love to do that, and I'd really love to talk about the Internet of Things, which is the biggest issue that faces everyone at home.
We will have you back on to do that again. Thank you so much, Ridgely, for being with
us.
Thanks, Ridge. Richard, thank you for being around as well. We've been talking about security this hour. Coming up this next hour, we're going to be talking about drones over Detroit. And Emily Hay will be with us, along with Mike Amon, to look into his crystal ball about the future in hour number two. You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast. Hello, I'm Foster Brown, the co-host of this program, The Internet Advisor, and we're smack dab in the middle of 3 hours of a special program here. We've been talking about security and a very new way of keeping us secure. Now we're going to move on to talk about drones. Yes, things flying over Detroit. Matter of fact, big and small drones. We're talking with Harry Arnold, who has Detroit's drone company. And we'll also be talking with Mike Amon from California about the future and Emily Hay about social media. Thank you for being here for hour number two of The Internet Advisor. My old pal Gary Baker with us in studio. Ed Rudell and Cal Carson are here as well. And are going to be helping us with our comments about the future that's ahead of us. But somebody who is very much practically involved in that future is Harry Arnold, who's with us in studio here. Harry is the president of and the founder of Detroit Drones. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Glad to have you here. We're going to have you talking about drones and some of the exciting things where, you know, the future in some ways is here right now in terms of some of the projects you have. But we'll get to that during the rest of this hour. So you want to stick around, help us to co-host the show?
It would be my pleasure.
All right. Very good. Well, we have somebody who's also part of our team on the line right now, and that's Emily Hay. Emily, thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Foster. Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
Well, you know, son, I just got to ask you, Emily, that first year, first Christmas with the little Hayette, what was it like?
Aw, Cal, you're so sweet to ask. It was beyond any expectation I could have ever had. Thank you. It was wonderful.
So does she now have her own Facebook page with all her pictures on it?
No, we're keeping that baby's digital footprint very small.
Wise mother there. We're talking about Ainsley, her very first child, been in the studio here with us. Congratulations on that again. It was neat seeing Christmas through her eyes. Well, let's take a look at 2015 through your eyes as you're looking out at social media and talk about some of the social networks. What do you see happening there?
Sure, yeah. 2015 is here. And there's a couple things, there's three things that I see for 2015 happening. I've been reading up a lot about this, and it's same old. You start to hear that we'll experience the rise and fall of the social networks. So what does that mean? Well, people are getting so sick and tired of Facebook taking our information that there's a new social network out there called Ello, E-L-L-O. Have you guys heard of it?
Yeah, I've heard it in passing, yeah.
Yeah. So that one, it's still in beta, and it's something that they're saying they will never have advertising. They think that it's creepy to use personal information to sell to advertisers. So that could be, you know, the new rising social network of 2015.
Yeah, but it also sounds like the Achilles heel, you know, of why it may not succeed, because you would need revenue of some type. So would this be a paid for service or free, do you think?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. So they say that they feel their users will be willing to pay for various features as you get to use the social network. Okay. So that's one I think is interesting. And then Google Plus keeps coming to the front burner. Is it going to last? Is it going to fade away? And so far, a lot of people are thinking that maybe we don't need Google Plus in 2015.
Ooh, that would be heresy to some Android users.
So in social media circles, are you saying, Emily, that we may be going to a trend where we will, quote, pay for privacy?
Well, again, if you're using a social network that sells, you know, your private information to advertisers and you want the opposite of that, I think you would be willing to pay for some various features. WhatsApp, we all know how successful WhatsApp is, and that costs a whopping $1 a year. So I think there's some value in paying for what you want.
And Gary, doesn't the premium version of LinkedIn offers you some of that same kind of security or privacy, I should say?
Sure, I know, and many more features.
You pay for a little more.
Yeah, you get more features, I believe.
Right.
Yeah, it's like every other app that's out there. You know, you can download a free app till you blue in the face, but it's like, okay, now we're going to give you advertising to pay for that app, or if you give us $5 for that app, we won't advertise to you.
Yeah,
so you're paying for privacy.
Yeah, we don't have to have advertising because you're paying us.
Exactly.
If you want it free, somebody's got to pay.
That's your second point, isn't it, Emily, about social advertising?
Sure, that's a perfect segue. So social advertising, it's definitely going to evolve and experience tremendous growth this year. The reason I say that is because, as we know on Facebook, less and less of our organic content or, you know, posts that we put on our pages, less of that gets out to our fans and friends. Therefore, we promote posts. We use Facebook ads. Well, if there's more demand for that, then obviously the cost of these ads can go up.
I wonder if that will work. I'm wondering if the piecemeal paying for these things is going to work, or an un-Facebook like Elo could make it happen. All right, third one you had down here was about videos and images.
Sure. So this year, as we've seen this past year, 2014, that videos and images in particular continue to dominate for social marketers. Instagram had a fantastic year in 2014. There's so many users, there's so many people that are jumping ship from Facebook and only using Instagram. So if marketers want to, they're planning on increasing their investment, they want to go image-based, they want to use video services, and Instagram offers all of that.
Well, remind me, who just bought Instagram? Was it Google?
Instagram was a Facebook acquisition.
Oh, a Facebook acquisition. That's
right. Yeah, that was a while ago. I had to think for a second.
Yeah, I did. Oh, that's right. That was the first $1 billion acquisition, I think, wasn't it? That they bought it for like...
Yeah, because then WhatsApp was, you know, big bucks, and Instagram looked like it was a big deal.
Chump change.
A bargain.
After we all kind of went, how much money? It's become kind of chump change on it. So it's interesting. So a Facebook product is something
right.
That you're
so
say.
Instagram, you know, remember it has, of course, images. That's its main bread
right,
and butter.
Right,
but
right.
It has micro videos. So they're saying that folks are using Vine less. You know, do you need a separate micro video site when Instagram lets you post images and micro videos? So, and then we're seeing with YouTube, it's just giving marketers and users more opportunity to have longer content. You know, not just a 15-second video.
Ed, you've always told us that was the place to go to look for help with some of the problems that you run into.
Oh, right, yeah.
I love how-to videos, yeah.
Oh, absolutely awesome. Matter of fact, my daughter's iPhone, her battery was not doing quite as well, and I went there, saw a YouTube video on how to replace that battery. Even on that same video, I was able to click and order the battery itself and the tools with it.
Wow. Booming on YouTube. Emily, thank you so much for being with us and pointing out these things. We'll be having Emily in for some special programming as well, I'm sure, as we go on through 2015 to talk about some of these individual elements. Those predictions you'll be able to find on our homepage later on today as well. Emily, hey, have a very good 2015.
Thanks, Foster. See you guys soon.
All right, bye-bye. Coming up in just a moment, Mike Amon, a futurist from Silicon Valley. Thank you again for being with us here for the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, here. Hour number 2 of 3 hours. And this hour, we're definitely, we've got that crystal ball up and we're taking a look at the future. Emily Haven with us to talk about social media. Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, Kel Carson, and Harry Arnold is with us in studio. And Harry, thank you again for being with us as our co-host. I kind of see you as somebody who is with your drones. You've kind of rolled up your sleeve and you're already at the future.
Yeah, that's a mixed blessing, but I'm sitting out here on the limb called future. Yes, sir, that's me.
We're going to be talking about some of your exploits and what you're doing with your drones. But I just thought it was kind of interesting to have you in today because, as I said, in some ways we talk about, Gary, you had to think about the drones and your predictions for this year, that there would be regulations that would finally come down about how to fly them and where to fly them. But you've already been, Harry, out there very legally doing a whole lot of stuff with your drones, haven't you?
Well, yes, and as I was just saying during the break, you really just have to make sure to respect, first of all, people's privacy, their property. When I got into the business, I was flying over private property with the owner's permission to document something that they wanted me to document.
Gotcha.
And that's much different than using it salaciously.
Yeah, where you're
like
sneaking
that.
In, doing something with the information you're getting.
Yes, because, you know, just because we're waiting for, quote, drone laws, unquote, doesn't mean that there aren't already laws about privacy.
Absolutely.
And endangering public welfare and other things like that you can run afoul of if you just operate without using common sense.
Common sense, I love that. One key factor in all things. Isn't it, guys?
No kidding. And, you know, the drones can be flown inside and outside. My son flies his around the house, and it'll come around the corner, and and he comes right up to me and looks me right in the eye, and then he backs it up and then flies it off into a different room. And, you know, people really know how to fly these drones, and especially kids that have played video games for so long. I mean, he picked it up so quickly, and I still can't. You know, keep it hovering, without it drifting one side or the other.
I think he lives in the future, as kids do. They live in the future. Yeah.
So how do you do this on a more commercial basis?
Well, pretty much just offer my services. There's a lot of traditional industries that have used aerial photography and video, like construction, demolition, things like that. And so they were a natural for approaching with a drone where you could do the aerial imagery at a right. fraction of the cost of oh, what yes. they would charge.
With helicopters, for instance, in the past.
Sure.
Yes.
Immensely.
And I've seen so many of the videos. They're really stable. I mean, people know how to fly these.
Well, oh, yeah. You've got a story to tell about the fires and about learning some things about how to cover fires in just a minute. I want to bring Mike Amon on. Mike, welcome to the Internet Advisor. Mike is the CEO out at San Joaquin Partnership out in Silicon Valley. And he is our guru, our swami we bring in here at the beginning of the year to talk. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Happy New Year to everyone.
Hey, Happy New Year. You've been listening in, I'm sure, to this conversation about drones. I know. Does that figure into some of the things that you will see coming up in 2015?
Oh, absolutely. From a real estate, a commercial real estate standpoint, almost all the major companies have a drone, but what we're seeing in addition to the footage is the simulation. So, for example, if you had a big warehouse and you had different schemes for stacking different types of products, you can simulate that along with the aerial footage. And I know one company who has actually leased a facility without the customer actually physically coming to the site.
Huh?
Yes.
I see, because of what they could simulate.
That's right.
Oh,
so
wow.
They can see the whole building with the drone aerial footage. And then on top of that, you can take three-dimensional drawings. Mm-hmm. It could even be a building that is in a CAD program, and you can simulate the building of that in a
incredible
in a site. And they have to when they do this, they have to make sure that you understand that the building's not really there.
but it's wow, it's so incredible. Harry, we were talking about the payloads that drones. Harry Arnold, by the way, is the head of the Detroit Drone Company. We're talking about the payloads they can carry, and it's not just like packages, but it's that information content that they can bring back.
Oh, yes. It's very flexible as far as payload. You just pretty much have a weight limit and if there's power consumption. But I did want to comment on the video that your guest was talking about as far as what we used to call it in the old 3D days was visualizations. The Denver RTA system center that was built for a couple hundred million dollars, one of the financial companies that was responsible for raising the funds to get that built, they actually spent $100,000 or so on a mixed media project where they used drone video, 3D models of the to-be-built transportation
right.
hub, and that's what you call a visualization. And when you go in and you pitch your project and you show the overhead view and the traffic patterns.
I love it.
You know, somebody getting ready to write a check would say, oh, hey, they've got it all figured out. It's
you have to assure them, as Mike said, that it's not real.
Yeah, right. So Harry, right. We had a few months ago, or a month and a half ago, we had a company in called Lunatic. And,
oh, yeah, Lunatic.
That was Doug Willett. And they had a partnership going with Google, the Small Business Association of Michigan, and Lunatic, and they had a big meeting over in Grand Rapids where they were actually flying drones outside. They've been doing that for a while to help do a lot of the mapping and whatnot, flying drones down the street and above the homes and buildings, but also he was talking about inside
right.
and being able to do that. Is that the kind of thing that you're talking about? You do that mapping first with a drone and then do some simulation? How does that work?
Well, you can do it in any kind of approach. It's as varied as videos can be. I mean, you can do indoor flight. You can do composite where you're shooting something that's already there and animating over it or changing it or evolving whatever the money will be.
So this is so cool. And Mike, this is what you're talking about, is the ability to do this allows you, as you said, somebody can write a check for a project without it existing in real time.
And I wanted to add, in a very valuable use, as you know, a lot of Detroit is being reclaimed or reinvested in.
Yes.
As a person looks at a building and takes a photograph of a building, say a factory building on the west side, you don't know if that building is worth $5,000 or $500,000 until you examine the roof of the building, because a lot of these buildings, you would gasp if you saw the roof, because in some cases it's completely open, which means you have water damage and mold damage, and you can't price or appraise a large building without looking at the roof. And then as an investor, what do? Fly in and climb a ladder? I mean,
exactly. Or as we said before, the helicopter technology, which is terribly, terribly expensive. Hey, Mike, can you hang on?
Sure.
Because I want to hear more of some of the things that you are looking at in 2015. Mike Amon, by the way, is president and CEO of the San Joaquin Partnership. And Mike, you're out there in Silicon Valley in California developing business opportunities and promoting the area out there. Am I right?
You're right.
The pinnacle of technology, I imagine.
We call it Greater Silicon Valley.
Greater Silicon Valley. Can anyone imagine anything greater than Silicon Valley?
And I was curious because Detroit Drone, right here in Detroit, Harry, what are some of the other uses that that your customers come to you for?
Well, that's one of my favorite things about what I do. It's so interesting because every day there'll be something new. I did a neighborhood study for Hiller's Market in South Lyon, shooting around their store. They're leasing some of the buildings in their property, and they wanted something to show people the area.
Well, and you did. I've got to get back to it. I've seen some video of what you've done with the Detroit Fire Department that I think is really, really important. It's also part of this as well. Okay, Mike Amon, you hold on out there in California. And Harry Arnold, thank you for being in here from Detroit Drone. We also have Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson, myself, Foster Brown. This is just the middle of our program, our three-hour special. We'll be back to talk more about drones and the future. Time to give credit where credit is due. Rich Lisinski, thank you very much for being behind the glass as our engineer and keeping this mad merry-go-round going. And Eric Dorsch, thank you very much for sitting and screening for us this evening. Good to have you around. That's exactly it. Well, and as we continue on in this second hour of the Internet Advisor, we're talking about the future, 2015, what people are predicting for it. We've had Emily Hay on talking about social media, rather. We talked about some of the other things that people are predicting with our staff. And also with us in studio, we're delighted to have, along with Gary and Ed and Cal, is Harry Arnold, who is the founder of Detroit Drone. And good to have you with us, Harry.
Good to be here.
And then on the line with us from sunny California, in the heart of the Silicon Valley, is Mike Amon. We have him with us every New Year's and the beginning of the year to talk about things that are going boom in the future. Mike, what do you see as you rub your crystal ball and look ahead into 2015? Yeah. What's another trend?
You know, the old Swami of San Joaquin. Yes.
Oh, there you go. The Swami of San Joaquin. I love it.
So it is bright and clear out here. So looking ahead, I think one of the amazing things that I've seen happen within the last year is what we call the year of the unicorns. And we're going to see this in the future, certainly in 2015, and if the markets hold in the future.
Only if we drink enough.
Well, these unicorns are billion-dollar valuations by venture capitalists. And last year, there were 25 companies, startups, that were valued at, 25 in 13, and it grew to 40 in 2014. And so I see a continuation of these billion-dollar valued startup companies, and some that you've already mentioned.
Give me some examples. Okay, go ahead. Give me some examples.
Well, Uber, certainly.
Uber?
Yes, and another one, which I think I mentioned the last year, was we were going to see a lot more smartphones out there, and they were going to be identified with corporations, and of course, that's the Fire Phone from Amazon.
Yeah.
But if you go look that up right now, it's $4.49 online, and $1 billion, actually one of the most highest valuation companies is out of China, who is also has cheap smartphones.
Xiaomi?
Yes. And so you may see that become a black swan in the smartphone area.
Now, hold on. Hang on a second. Explain.
Mike, I got to ask another question, though, around there were more IPOs, initial public offerings, where stock of these startups were sold to the public, more in 2014 than any other year going back all the way to 2000.
Wow.
Are we in for another bubble burst?
I was going to say, sounds like another bubble wrap to go bop.
Uber is valued at $40 billion. Twitter is valued at $20 billion. You've got Snapchat that's also around $20 billion valuation.
And Mike is saying that right out of the gate they're being valued at.
And how is this all going to continue?
Well, it is because there's more money out there and more ways to get risk capital than ever before. And I know it's hard, especially Gary and I and others with online technologies and trying to finance and grow that company a long time ago. Times have changed, and you're going to see this continuation in certainly 2015. That IPO window is open, and there's going to be a lot of folks who come through the door.
Now, I got to ask Harry Arnold, is this good news for you as a small business owner? Do you think that is there going to be more money out there to help you?
Well, I really do.
You hope somebody values you at a billion.
that's really, really a good sounding thing. I think as Gary and I were discussing on the break, the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, coming out with regulations and certifications will do a lot to dot the I's and cross the T's. And that will enable a lot of investment capital to come in, where there are a lot of people sitting on the sidelines to see what the regulations will be.
What impresses me about you, Harry, you've been a hobbyist. You've had your hands on this for more than a decade, am I right?
Well, yes. I've been in RC and doing
which
this
is remote control. Okay.
Yes, remote control cars, planes, and so forth. And
planes, trains, and airplanes.
Yes. Yeah. My dad was a train guy.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't allowed to play with his trains, so I went over
so
to
you're
the planes.
Gonna go cool, or you're gonna play with planes?
Yeah, Cal.
So since you brought up the FAA, I had a question in regards to drones. What is my legal airspace above my domain when it comes to a drone flying through?
Good question. Yeah.
You mean if a neighbor is flying a drone over your property?
Correct.
Well,
I want to do it. What are the boundaries that exist now?
You know, as I said earlier in the segment, I concentrate on jobs over private property with the owner's permission. There have been cases in Texas and a lot of more libertarian areas of the country where people have actually shot down drones. That happened over a hunting lodge where somebody flew a drone. So
save on clay pigeons that way.
Right, yeah. Right.
Well,
yeah,
a hunting lodge, what knucklehead would fly out? Unidentified flying object over guys have guns.
Over guys that are drinking with guns?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was going to say, I was really looking at buying one of those $79 drones and surprising my brother, flying it 200 feet into the air so we can survey his 120 acres just to see where we might want to go hunting tomorrow morning.
Yeah, they're $63 now.
Yeah. So, is that possible?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I could have used the information to say, look at the deer over there in the cedar forest. They're coming out at this time of night. That would have been completely plausible. They own the property.
Yep.
Right?
Right.
Yeah, but the bottom line is, whether it's legal or illegal, whatever's going on, what is my airspace rights?
Well, right now, currently, the FAA has had it upheld in an appeal that they can regulate anything from 1 inch high up to whatever they want. So when they get around to making the regulations, if those include paper airplanes and spitballs, then
frisbees. Please, God, no.
Well, I'm just saying that's part of the mess that they're in.
Okay, what I'm hearing you saying right now is while there may not be these explicit rules and regulations, there's this common sense privacy things. You can stay out of a lot of trouble right now.
Yeah, there was a gentleman in New York that got fined $10,000 because he interfered with an actual aircraft.
Yeah,
there's been instances where people have been sighted by airplanes, and that's close enough to cause them to make a major issue of it, because they can honestly bring down an airplane.
Now, in terms of altitude, I heard it was like 400 feet,
yes,
3 miles from an airport.
Yes, that there is a 25-year-old FAA advisory called AC-5197, that stands for Advisory Circular, and it has things on it that include flying 300 feet and the distance to the airport, and again, common sense has to come into it.
So, but there are there's no regulations right now that say this is where you are.
I'm not supposed to fly less than 500 feet. Unless it's inhabited, and then I'm not supposed to fly less than 1,000 feet in an airplane.
And again, it's common sense. I've seen helicopters flying up and down the I-75 corridor at 300 or 400 feet.
Yeah, they're not supposed to. Yeah, 500 feet is the minimum.
Well, yeah, and again, as in, like, if you're in a boat and there's a freighter coming, sometimes the rules, get superseded by common sense.
Yes.
And you have to,
Is that Cal? Does that answer your question?
No, it didn't at all.
Let me directly address.
Because there is no rule.
You're going to have to find, as far as the FAA is concerned, they're not going to help you. But if you can find a sheriff or somebody else, a constable that's sympathetic to your cause, he can have privacy things thrown at him. He can have invasion,
make
space,
friends,
endangerment. He could be, if you're just sitting there and a drone's flying, it could be seen as being dangerous.
Okay.
So you're going to have to appeal some kind of other way.
Now, despite all of that, you have been able to practically help, and I want you to talk about the fire department in particular, what you've been able to do with them.
Yeah, well, I was, as a lifelong Detroit resident, I was really happy I got a chance to work with Homeland Security and the fire department a few years ago on Angels Night, and we actually flew a drone around neighborhoods, and it's kind of a...
You can see footage of that video through your Detroit drone site, DetroitDrone.com.
Yes, sir. And that kind of led to working more with the fire department, to the point where we were going out where there were fires and shooting an image from the fire down and letting the incident commander see
in real
image.
Time.
Yes,
he was able to use your eye in the sky
to
see where there were hot spots, where there were danger areas to protect firemen.
Yes.
And I want to... Is that going someplace?
I hope so, because it will save lives and save money.
Excellent. Harry Arnold, I want you to hang on. We're going to talk more about maybe some of the future uses of drones. Mike Amon, thank you for being around with us. You want to hang on for one more segment? See if you got another one in there?
Sure.
All right. Mike Amon with us from the Silicon Valley. We're going to continue talking about the future 2015, and particularly through the eyes of the drones. If you're just catching us for the first time, here in the middle of our Internet Advisor special, be going on until 7 o'clock this evening tonight, with some very special focus, simply go to internetadvisor.net, and you'll see all of our show notes there. It'll link you off to many of the other resources, a toolkit that Ed Rudell, who is in here studio, has developed for us, and you'll see podcasts, past programs. You get on and hear about all sorts of things, like Terry Takai last week that we had in as a wonderful guest. And with Cal, we've been talking about Apple things throughout the years. You'll find them listed there as well. Today, we are delighted to have in studio with us, along with the usual group of suspects, Harry Ardle, who is with us from Detroit Drone. And Harry, once again, good to have you in here. Thank you very much. And then we're also having with us online somebody who our group, the Swami of Silicon Valley.
Of San Joaquin.
That's right. The Swami of San Joaquin is with us. That's Mike Amon. Mike, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome. It's great to be here.
Mike is with the San Joaquin Partnership, which is an organization that promotes development of entrepreneurs in that area of the world.
He's the economic development czar in that part of the world.
And ooh, it's a czar. Czar.
One valley over from Silicon Valley.
All right, hey, Mike.
Did I get that, Mike, right? Right, Mike?
Well, yeah, it's one valley over, but it's really part and parcel with what is happening in Silicon Valley as such. That's why we call it Greater Silicon Valley. But yes, lots of changes going on out here.
Hey, Mike, I got a question for you. Our last segment, we talked about these startups and everything like that. How the heck does something become worth $1 billion so fast?
Well, I think what you have to understand is, to get that valuation, you have to be in Silicon Valley. What I have seen over the last 5 years in particular, when it comes to innovation, to be relevant and to access this huge amount of capital, 45% of all the risk capital in the world is in Silicon Valley, and 60% of all risk capital is in California.
Wow.
And so what we've seen is non-traditional technology companies such as Walmart, such as McDonald's, all the automobile companies are out here in Silicon Valley innovating, using this so-called ecosystem to grow these ideas. And the scale is just increasing. That's why I brought up this unicorn or this billion-dollar valuation.
Yeah.
You know, being back in the Midwest, you just don't see the scale in the growth of this. And frankly, you know, I think Harry ought to change his company's name to include the globe, because if the FAA doesn't move along with drones, the rest of the world will. So Detroit and the world, or infinity, is where he needs to think about it. Although
if you can,
by his website, he's doing very well.
If you can give me a $20 billion IPO, you can call it whatever you want.
Yeah, you get to call it whatever you want. It seems kind of ingrown, though. But Cal, go ahead.
Okay, so then my question to you, Mike, would be this. If I'm a startup here in the Midwest, do I need to relocate in Silicon Valley? Or how do I get the people in Silicon Valley to say, hey, we want to throw our dollars
in the
Midwest?
No, wait a minute. You're asking a guy who's paid to get people to come to his area and open up.
Yeah, but he's
shop.
A Swami. He can go beyond the realms of the
natural. Well, we just talked about global. Let's be global. We can start here in the Midwest and go from there.
No, there is no doubt that you can get funded if you're not in Silicon Valley. But you need to have a presence there is what I'm suggesting.
Oh.
Gotcha.
Oh. And this is the presence maker. Okay, you mean like an office there? Is that what you're saying?
An office, a relationship with someone who is promoting what you're doing wherever you happen to be. So
Harry,
so my point being is that many countries have incubator startups, whatever you want to call them, for their startups, and so they come into Silicon Valley. They get their ideas exposed and funded because the country or the state has an office there that promotes those startups.
This is leading into our next hour, by the way. We're going to be talking about innovation in Detroit with a group of people from an incubator type of thing. And the question will be then, maybe to apply this, how do we get really serious money here to work with people in Detroit? Go ahead.
Well, and there's a lot of serious money here. It's just not at the scale in Silicon
Valley. Yeah, not the same scale.
And Mike, I think it was 30 years ago this year that you and I started taking trips out to the Valley from here when you were living here, right?
Absolutely.
I think it's 31 maybe.
Careful there. I'm the old
young
Swami now, yeah. But and I believed in what we were doing back then to the point where I've located an office, which this year I'm going to spend 2 days at least a week in Silicon Valley promoting our area, both our entrepreneurs and as far as entrepreneurs there, to come out and lower their burn rate.
Well, there you go, Harry. We've just made a contact here.
Yeah, I'm writing.
He's writing furiously, Mike. We're going to have him get in touch with you. That's really important to make that contact, Eddie. Okay. Listen, Mike, one other thing. Before we where you put the cloth over your crystal ball, is there anything else? And I know there's lots of other things. We hope to post a list that you're going to be making of predictions for 2015. But is there any one thing that you see that you can talk about, put your finger on before we leave?
Well, I just want to go back to things that change your life. So 3 years ago, I put a new solar roof on my house. This year I bought a plug-in hybrid Ford Fusion. All the LED lights on my Christmas tree and around me, all my Christmas lights are LED, and they're programmable now. Oh. I have a 4K TV. So next year we're going to see Windows 10, we're going to see the iWatch, we're going to see more sensors everywhere. We're going to see people cutting the cable. HBO now is you're going to be able to get that over the internet.
That's right, HBO Plus, right?
Yeah, and so there's really rapid change. People here in Silicon Valley live with rapid change, but people that I talk to, it's just going faster and faster.
It seems like that. Seems like the carousel has just picked up speed. So how are you planning on coping with it? Buying another device?
I'm going to invest in an iPad and also an iPhone, the large format this year, with the fingerprint, because security and payments are going to be big this year.
I think so too. Matter of fact, that was part of my prediction. I think I saw, Cal, you mentioned it as well, about payments and the fingerprint security in particular. Mike, we're going to be wrapping these things up right now, but thank you very much for being with us. Mike Amon from the Swami of San Joaquin Valley, and we'll be having his predictions in more detail coming up. They'll be on our prediction page, and that'll be coming up a little later on.
One other thing, Foster. Thank you for 24 years as the voice on WJR for Internet Advisor. Great, great job.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you so much. It's been 17 here for that, but I have also been in broadcasting in many other ways for 24 years, matter of fact, close to 40 in some other areas. But, Mike, thank you so much for being here with us, too.
You're welcome.
And we will be checking back with him, Mike Amon, during the year. Now, Harry, I want to talk with you just kind of quickly and say thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
We're going to be talking about innovation coming up in the next hour. You certainly are on the cutting edge of that with the Detroit drone. Check out our homepage, internetadvisor.net. You can see right there how you can get to Detroit Drone, find out more about the exciting things that are happening. I don't think we can yet imagine the kind of areas we're going to be in.
Well, there's quite a few coming up, but some of the most popular ones will probably be networking, sniffing and flying near networks to get information on them, situational awareness for first responders, and don't forget the hobbyists, like Mr. Baker's son. I'm personally part of a group that's organizing racing and other things. And
we'll have more leads to that coming up. Harry Arnold, thank you so much for being with us. Next hour, folks, stick around after the news. We're going to be talking about innovation in Detroit.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast.
Hello, Foster Brown, introducing you to hour number 3 of this special edition of the Internet Advisor. Normally, after our first hour of our program, the next hour is taken up with answering your questions about your computers. But since this is the first broadcast of 2015, we thought we'd take a little time looking at a number of very important areas of security we've been talking about. And then we were talking with an innovator here about drones in Detroit. And this hour, we're going to be talking about innovation with Amanda Lewan and Dave Anderson from Bamboo Detroit. Well, guys, it's a marathon. We're going on here for a third hour. And thank you so much, Gary, for being in here.
It's great to be here. You know, there was a time when you and I did 4 hours. That was a little much. 3 hours is great.
And that's more like a regular radio show, but that was a lot. And we did it with people calling in with questions primarily.
That's right.
And by the way, for those of you who have been used to calling in our second hour of our program to get your questions answered, we've already had some people who have called in. We're not going to be taking questions this week because we have a unique opportunity here, and we'll explain that in just a moment. But you can get your questions in to people like Ed Rudell and Cal Carson and myself and Gary during the week. Take some time out to answer your questions, and even over the holiday break. So in studio right now, and you get those questions to us, by the way, by going to internetadvisor.net and then clicking on the Contact Us button. And that'll get your question in right away. Right now, by the way, I want to thank Eric Dorsch for sitting in and answering our phones. We have Mike Stetz, I think, has stepped in now, and he's handling the dials back there as our engineer. Thank you for being here for our third hour. Okay, Gary Baker, Cal Carson is here from Apple Land. Good to have you in, along with Ed Rudell, who are our regular folks who are in studio with us every week. help with answering your questions and our technical experts. We also have with us in studio, and they're going to be our co-host anchoring this hour, Amanda Luan, and we have Dave Anderson. They're both co-founders of something called Bamboo Detroit. And guys, thank you very much for being a Luanda. It's Amanda, pardon me, Luanda. That would be an interesting combination. Amanda, it's good to have you here. You are quite a fire plug.
Thank you. We're really excited to talk about innovation. We see it happening all the time in Detroit, at Bamboo Detroit. So
yeah,
we've got lots of great stuff.
And you, and matter of fact, Dave, you guys got together a number of years ago to create this, and it's called a co-working space, am I right? Is that the best way to call it?
Yeah, it's a co-working space. It's basically the intersection of a coffee shop, your home, and a corporate office.
I love it.
And so when you don't want to work at any of those three, then you come to a co-working space.
And
so now, when you know, a number of years ago, we started kind of a shared office arrangement. How is this different than those typical executive suites that you see popping up other places?
So inherently, it's not really different. The biggest difference is we don't use any cubicles or sectioned off areas. We want to create an open working environment, so it's just desk space. The other big thing is, you know, people don't really use desktops now. You know, they just come with their laptop, and so that really contributes to the open working environment.
And I imagine kind of the water cooler conversations have got to be wonderful, right? People helping each other. Somebody has a problem. Does that happen?
Oh, all the time. I mean, me leaving a corporation was one of the biggest things that I
missed.
Where
were you working?
Bosch, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the German supplier.
Yeah, so, I mean, when you leave and you're starting something on your own, it gets a little lonely. It's kind of nice to have other people doing the same thing, even if it's a different type of company, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, working at home is extremely lonely, right? Working at a coffee shop can be very distracting. And working
right.
You know, in a corporate office is just too expensive for a lot of people who are starting up. And so it really helps to be around other like-minded entrepreneurs who, you know, don't necessarily think the same way but can contribute to the growth of your company.
Well, because there's a new environment like that that you just described, it sounds more like a collaboration space. How do you concentrate in a collaboration space, or do you just don't go there when you have to do concentration?
Yeah, it depends. For some people it's different, but it definitely requires a paradigm shift. It did for me. I typically, I'm kind of odd. I listen to white noise when I'm working because it helps me really focus on my work.
I really haven't heard of that band before. Just kidding.
So, I think we could all use a little more.
In a space like that, just like in a cubicle space, I imagine when you want to take a call, you use your Bluetooth headset and you just walk around this large vaulted a warehouse. Was it an old warehouse?
Where is it, Amanda? Where have you physically located?
We're right downtown at Gratiot and Brush Street, so just a couple blocks from Campus Martius.
Yeah.
Right down near the opera?
Yeah, right by the opera house.
Some of the beautiful old buildings there.
Yeah, it's a great spot.
How many floors?
We have a whole floor to ourselves. Just
a whole
floor. Right now. Eventually, maybe we'll have a couple.
And about how many people are working in that?
We have 60 members right now. Godwin, who's here with us, is one of our members with Yum Village. We have quite a few, all different types of companies, tech, retail, all types of stuff.
So how much does it cost? Like if Eddie wanted to have a shop down there, or Cal, or Gary wanted to go back to his roots and start another company, I think he's had enough of that. What would it cost?
It starts at $99 a month if you want to sign up for a whole year. So we kind of have it set up like a gym membership. You can choose to do monthly, 6 months, or a whole year, and kind of come and work on your business and use the space as often as you need it.
So what services do I get for $99? I mean, does it come with pizza and pop and the whole shooting match?
It comes with, you know, 24/7 access to the creative space, which a lot of spaces around here don't really offer that yet.
Right.
So that's pretty cool. We have an online community. We have discounts to events and workshops. So it's not just using the physical space. It's really learning, interacting, meeting people. There's a lot of other benefits there that kind of come along with it, too.
And sometimes you do get free pizza.
If you hang out with Dave, you get free pizza.
Every day is a Gene day, I would imagine.
Now, is this strictly a space that you use in, quote, an office sense, as opposed to I come down there and me and three other people want to take and fabricate stuff using 3D fabricating machines and that sort of thing? What is the use of the space?
It really varies. As Amanda alluded to, we have members that range across the gamut, really. We do have some folks that are working on physical products, and they typically might, you know, go into our basement, which we're trying to
Yeah. More of a creative space.
Like a laboratory or a manufacturing laboratory.
Yes,
or such.
Exactly.
Yeah, but if I remember correctly, I mean, if you're working with professional customers, it's a meeting place to bring clients to.
And there are other fabricating hubs around the city of Detroit where you can go in and take care of it, machinery. Am I right?
Yes, absolutely.
As we go on in this hour, we're going to talk more about that as well. And we're going to bring Godwin in and some of the other people who are the innovators here in the city of Detroit as we take a look at innovation in Detroit. Well, despite what the friendly lady said, we are not taking calls right now because we're focusing this hour, a very unique kind of three-hour program that we have. This is the third hour of the Internet Advisor. My name is Foster Brown, the co-host here. And we're focusing on innovation in the city of Detroit, which is kind of exciting. We're talking with Amanda Lewan and Dave Anderson, who are the co-founders of Bamboo Detroit, which is kind of a co-working space. And it's funny, as in the break, I was talking with Gary. We often tease that we should have a special extra program, which is the break times, because all sorts of conversations happen there. And Gary, this is the last thing you said before we chimed out of the conversation was, I said, yeah, Gary, yeah, 20 years ago, you just celebrated the 20th anniversary of
Online Tech,
which is where you and I met back in 19...
And Jan Ness and Mike Klein run that today and doing just a wonderful job.
But in 1998, you were there to help people get online, in particular business class. And I happened to have gotten online with you. You were my ISP, Internet Service Provider. That's how Gary and I met.
And you started with one of our guys, and you got funneled over to me. I guess I handle all the hard cases or something. Who knows?
Well, yeah, you've been stuck with this for the last 17 years now with us. Yeah. But the comment you made, I was talking about you being kind of a serial entrepreneur, and you said that Online Tech was the last of
eight companies that I started. We were just talking. One of the companies was a shared office resource center.
Oh, wow. Right?
And so we built not only that, but a number of other things around. But it was really real estate oriented. People came in; they could rent their office by the day, month, or even hour.
Right, right.
They could rent other things like a conference room and whatnot. But they didn't have this open shared space.
That's the
We had an incubator. Right. I was on the board of our very first incubator in Ann Arbor, the Chamber Innovation Center, and so that's where we took all the entrepreneurs. Put them this way: this was for people that didn't qualify for the Innovation Center and still wanted the shared space. You really have this incubator space.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Right? Without some of the other services, I know you don't provide them all the services, but you provide that capability for people to actually interact, and I think that's the most valuable part.
Right. A lot of our companies at the space are more early stage startups, so they're kind of just getting their feet off the ground. They're working on their product. They're maybe launching their app. They're kind of working away overnight a lot to get all their programming done. So they come, they get to network with everybody and learn and share skills and resources. Mm-hmm. Actually, a lot of shared skills is what we see. So if you need a programmer, you need a designer.
Or somebody who knows 3D printing, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Now, you also offer people, Gary, in terms of this, you have a network you've kind of created then as well, right?
Yeah. So there's actually about, I think, 13 co-working spaces in the Detroit area. And so we formed a travel pass. So you can be a member of Bamboo, but travel to a couple of the other spaces.
I love it.
That's all online at colabdetroit.com, colabdetroit.com.
Yeah, it basically started from us recognizing that Detroit tends to operate in these silos, and we want to bring everyone together.
I love it.
And so there's actually 19 co-working spaces in the area, and none of them are really talking to each other. So we created this week-long event in which we celebrate entrepreneurship and co-working in general. And from that spawned this pass that we call the Travel Pass.
I love it. What a creative innovative. Now, we talked before about the fact, and Cal had asked a question about what you have to offer. In terms of fabrication, though, there are separate kind of places in Detroit that you can lead people to, right?
Yes.
Well, they can get hold of some really fancy, like CNC machines and things like that, right?
Yeah, the most notable fabrication space would be Pony Ride, which was started by a friend of mine, Phil Cooley, located in Corktown. And he just has a ton of very innovative companies that are
machinery
doing
nobody
space.
Could ever think of owning but could rent.
Exactly. And that's you're really touching on this shared economy.
You know, I the love whole that idea shared. Is this maker space too. You know, Tech Shop out in Allen Park is doing something, and they're partnering with Ford. And Ford is their partners because they want to provide this kind of activity where you could do you know, could have this kind of...
Oh, the next great innovation for the car industry could come out of any one of these things.
Right. Actually, to add to that, Ford just partnered with a new accelerator. They've been in a couple other cities called TechStars. And so they're doing the mobility program starting in 2015. So that'll be something to keep an eye out.
TechStars. I love it.
TechStars is huge for Detroit. Mm-hmm. It's actually one of the most notable tech accelerators in the nation.
So what is that? How does that fit into the process? People start out with you and then end up at an accelerator? How does it work?
Potentially, yeah. So we are for the very early stage. We don't really give out money. We just provide that platform for companies to come work together.
And the co-working, the shared experience, shared knowledge, et cetera.
Exactly. And then they may go on to raise money from different venture capitalists in the area or, you know, insert themselves into a tech accelerator like TechStars.
Now, you have an example of somebody on your it was a great article called The Top 12 Michigan Innovation Stories from 2014, a great blog entry, which is on our homepage. Amanda, there was one of you guys that went on then to get some money in a rather interesting kind of way.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about a lot of times some of these new products, they start as an idea. They make a couple of them just to show it off, and they'll do a Kickstarter. So Hemingright was one of those tools we were talking about.
Right.
They're a Detroit-made product, and they just raised $250,000.
And they're like a typewriter
that
you can – and Rick Broida, our gadget guy, loved this because – you avoid the distractions that you have as a writer, but you have all the benefits of a digital input device.
Right.
That creates the articles with a digital, all. In other words, all that without being distracted by Groupon ads coming up or being.
Yeah, it's interesting because the Hemingright really embodies innovation.
Oh,
because
yes.
You're looking at something that has existed for the longest, but because it's in this time period where we've gotten so many distractions from typing online, you know, they found a new way to actually do that.
Exactly. And innovation in that sense isn't something brand new. Often it's existing things put together in a unique new way.
Absolutely, yeah. A lot of the companies we spotlighted have that example.
So Kickstarter is a way that's done that. Let's bring somebody else in who's sitting in studio with us with a big smile on his face. He had a lovely time last time he was here. Godwin, who is a chef, is with us. And Godwin, Yum Village is your project, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's Yum Village. Essentially, it's an Airbnb for pop-up chefs.
An Airbnb for pop-up chefs. Now, pop-up chefs are people who work at very good restaurants around the area and then look for a place that they want to have a pop-up feast.
Yeah, absolutely. It could be anywhere. It's not restaurant specific, though. It could literally be in the lounge of a movie theater.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Any space, right?
Right, exactly.
What are some of the spaces that people have held those?
So far, it's Revolver and Hamtramck has been a good location. We've done some locations at the rooftop of the Madison and then most recently Colors Restaurant right in the Paradise Valley.
That's great. Kel?
So how does a pop-up chef differ from a caterer?
Well, yeah, so your pop-up chef isn't necessarily linked to a specific order. So like a caterer would be more for like a commercial event where a pop-up chef would literally be hosting a dinner temporarily for the crowd.
Like for 50 people or for X number of people?
X number of people. But it's not for like a function or an event. It's actually to highlight the chef himself.
Now, this isn't a pizza party for you and your buds.
Yeah.
Okay, so I wouldn't hire you to come in and be my chef. If I hired you to come in and be a chef at an engagement I was having, that would be a caterer situation where you're doing the opposite. You're promoting yourself by appearing magically somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And we give a lot of chefs within the city the opportunity to promote themselves as well.
And you had been doing that individually for yourself as a chef.
Yeah, in 2013, we had a good amount of pop-ups around the city. We were at the Berkeley Front. We were at Deli in the Alley. That was an exciting time. And then we decided to give other chefs the same kind of...
Exactly. Idea. I love it. Your idea then was to create this kind of community where a chef could come in and say, I want to do a pop-up meal. Wherever, you know, Hart Plaza, you know, whatever you want to do it, whatever space you want it, then you took care of arranging the details.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's really important to give chefs the opportunity to create an enterprise for themselves, like a leather worker or a carpenter. You know, everyone can make a good living.
Now, having given that, let's bring in this conversation around, and maybe we can continue this conversation. What do you need in terms of cash, then, to get this thing to work?
I think it's really focused on just generating an application or an avenue. Right now, we operate offline, and with that, it works for the time being.
Okay, but there's going to come a stage when you're going to want somebody to recognize this and say, Godwin, this is so cool. I want to give you X number of dollars, right?
Right, exactly.
How much would that be?
You know what? I can't put a number on it.
Shoot for the stars, Godwin.
We'll keep pushing it. Hang on, folks. Coming back in just a minute. We'll talk with Godwin about his project and more about innovation in Detroit. Welcome. It's the Internet Advisor, a very special three-hour edition. If you've never been here before, we're just kind of extending things here. Normally, we would take calls in the second part of our program, and we will be taking a call from one of our innovators who's here. But we thought, looking ahead at 2015, we'd look at what's on the horizon. Who is there right now who are helping people to innovate things in our city of Detroit, things that are beginning to make their way out to the internet, people are beginning to know about them, and the people who are involved in launching one of those areas is called Bamboo Detroit, which is a co-working site in downtown Detroit, are Amanda Lewan and Dave Anderson, who are in studio. And folks, again, thank you so much for being here, Dave and Amanda. Great job that you're doing there. Press a button and you're going to be... There you go.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank,
you're used to writing so a blog and people pay attention to what you say, Amanda. By the way, she does a great job with a blog from a site called Mishapreneur, where you kind of are like the listening post in some ways for people who are involved in starting up businesses. And great, great site, by the way.
Thank you.
And as a matter of fact, the article that we kind of link off to, the top 10 innovation stories from 2014, was one you wrote. And as a matter of fact, we'll be talking with one of those people in just a little bit. Godwin is with us. He's from Yum Village, which is one of the innovation projects. And I said, at the break, before we went in, I said, how much money do you want? How do we get this thing off the ground? Have you figured out how much money you want?
He's not only from Yum Village, he is.
He is. That's true. When I look at you, yes. He's an excellent chef. A vegetarian?
Yeah, so our pop-up was actually vegetarian-focused.
But it could be anything. Yeah. It could be prime rib for Ed, right?
Absolutely.
Right, Ed? You want prime ribs or hamburgers, right, Ed?
No, actually, my wife's a vegetarian, so most of my diet is vegetarian now.
Oh, well, there you go.
But every once in a while, I just got to have that red meat. Betcha.
Now, what we're talking about here, Amanda and Dave, is how you get your innovations to the next level. Because many of them, I imagine, could just kind of die on the vine. There's neat ideas. Yum Village is a wonderful, kind of an Airbnb for pop-up chefs. Very specific, but wonderfully local. How do you get them beyond that stage, you know, from just kind of crawling to where they're really walking and becoming a serious target for venture capital? Any ideas?
I think the first thing that we should note is that, you know, you have to determine at which point you need money. There's a lot of companies, especially in Detroit, that just don't need money at a certain okay. stage in their business. You typically want to raise money when you're trying to scale. And so we need to do as much as we can without money and get it to a point in which, you know, you're attracting the money to take your business to the next level.
Where does your wisdom come from in this?
Certainly the best way to raise money is to sell something.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. When you're generating revenue, you know, you need to take it to the next level. Then we can talk about raising money.
You know. Where does this wisdom come from, Dave?
I'm just curious. Read a lot.
No, it's really interesting that the two of you bring relatively young people, and like Mr. B over here, who has, you know, innovated eight or more times. He's a serial innovator. You guys are young chronologically and kind of new to the business. Where are you getting this?
I mean, a lot of this is, you know, some of it is experience. Some of it is just reading some of the most successful entrepreneurs that have done it. I try to read as much as possible about this.
How about you, Amanda?
Same thing. I mean, there's a lot of great podcasts and blogs. Like, yep. I follow James Altucher, Jason Calacanis. There's quite a few of them out there, and they're just willing to share their stories, their information. It's a good way to keep Detroit connected to Silicon Valley and these other hubs around the country.
That word share, I think, is so important.
And I was going to say, I think a lot of it boils down to passion. You have to be passionate about anything that you're doing. It sounds like we have two people in the studio here that are very passionate about what they do.
And Godwin, you have
three,
a passion,
I'm
too.
Sorry.
Well, no, but I mean, he has that kind of passion. And there may be somebody in the audience who's saying, where do I go with my passion? And that was, how did you connect to these people?
I believe it was through an actual individual, Roger Mensa. He had a business he was doing himself called, it was Bootstraps at the time. Mm-hmm. And we came in, and then Dave and Amanda have been great. I literally started Yum Village from an idea without a name to what it is now, all through Bamboo.
And this is how long it took to develop this?
I think it was about 6 months now that we've been kind of up and running.
Excellent, excellent. So you found out through somebody else. Is that personal networking that makes this kind of thing happen in many ways? We have somebody online with us right now who is one of those people who also was involved and had a passion for something. And I believe that we're talking with one of your folks who started up something called Get Up and Go. Chris Bogdan, Bogdan, right, Chris? Hello, Chris. Are you with us? There you are. Hi, Chris. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Nice to meet you.
Nice meeting
you.
Yeah,
I run a business called Get Up and Go, and we manufacture caffeinated muffins, cookies, and brownies equivalent to a cup of coffee.
And fittingly, this began at a college campus.
Yep. It began at University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. I was spending $6 to $7 a day and a muffin and a coffee every day. And I was like, you know, I really want to combine two of my favorite things into one product, which was more portable, affordable, and, you know, which was innovative.
Uh-huh.
So I started experimenting with it, and everybody really liked it. So I started approaching buyers at stores, and here I am.
Now, when you approached the buyers at the stores, did you have a line of products that you brought them? Here's my muffins, here's my brownies?
So essentially, we just started talking to buyers, and we weren't in stores until about a year. Been working at this for about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we got into our store, our first store, September 2013, and essentially we just went there with products and we're like, look, try this, you know, it's awesome. And they really liked the taste and kind of helped us with the packaging to make it, you know, approved by the FDA and mm-hmm. make sure it met all the guidelines.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of hoops to jump through. How did you connect then with the folks at Bamboo Detroit with Amanda and Dave and their
product? So I actually launched a Kickstarter back in, I believe it was the end of April or the beginning of May,
mm-hmm.
and I reached out to Amanda because I knew that she wrote for Michipreneur, and she wrote an article about us and got us a lot of backers on Kickstarter.
Oh, that's cool. Great. So how much money did you raise on Kickstarter?
We raised $10,000 for our first manufacturing run.
Okay. And so that meant, you had to get the licensed kitchen, I would imagine, and then produce the products according to the
So that was actually like, it's a co-manufacturer. So they do like really, really big runs that I couldn't do myself so that I could scale up effectively and do it cost effectively. And avoid the overhead cost of building my own plant.
Oh, that's cool. Now, where did you learn some of that stuff? Was it at Bamboo Detroit? Or is this something else?
Actually, no. Kind of just, you know, like the other guy said, just reading a lot and connecting with other people in the industry. I have some really good advisors that have been in the same business that have sold their companies or have been through the same, you know, ups and downs of a startup.
Now, so, but was that something that was up to you to research, or are there places you can go? I'm thinking of places like Bamboo Detroit or maybe some other kind of co-working spaces.
So Bamboo, you know, it's a great – incubators like that are great for first-time entrepreneurs because, you know, they have the – you meet common minds and people with the same mindset, you know, that want to start a business and are passionate about it and willing to do something. So it's a really good environment for everybody because you guys all benefit and, you know, bounce ideas off each other.
And then you have another place where you're getting the actual goods, the muffins, things like that made and learning how to do that cost effectively. Now,
exactly.
So Chris Bogdan, where are you right now with Get Up and Go?
So I just got into a distributor in Grand Rapids. They have about, I believe, 3,000 stores in the Midwest. And I'm just starting to scale up with them. They have about 10 states in the Midwest. And in a few days, we're starting to scale up to a bunch of schools and start testing it in each state.
Wow.
So they have Michigan, Kentucky, Illinois, Iowa, a bunch of Midwestern states.
That is fantastic. So, Eddie, look for the Get Up and Go products.
Oh, I will. Well, if I'm heading to Grand Rapids tomorrow, I'll drop off my kids. Now, there are a lot of manufacturers in that area. I think Myers is based out of there as well.
Oh, yes.
So, yep.
Grand Rapids is an incredible industrial center for
it is, yeah.
Any number of different things. So are you now based in Grand Rapids? Is that where you're going to be?
So I'm actually out of Ann Arbor.
Okay, you're still out of Ann Arbor.
I graduated from there, and then I have a warehouse where I keep my stuff in Livonia.
So what's the next level of cash that you need to take this from dream to first steps to now really making the move? Because I imagine this is kind of a critical moment for you.
Yeah, so as the other guy said, you know, I'm bootstrapping. I have a product that's making revenue. I'm making money. We're profitable. So honestly, until I would say until we get into a few more distributors,
mm-hmm.
Or start adding more products, that would be when we want to raise money.
Okay. Where will you go? Where will you go then, Chris, when that moment arrives?
I'll probably stay in the Detroit area. I don't really have any desire to...
Cool. So you're looking for venture capital in this area, right?
Yeah. That's
all right.
The plan right now, at least, when we start.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for being with us. We got to move on. We got some other folks we're going to talk to as well. Chris Bogdan, okay. And it's called Get Up and Go. We can find out more about that by going to our Internet Advisor site. Thanks so much for being with us, Chris.
Thank you so much.
And
bye.
Good luck to you. Back in just a moment to talk to another innovator. Thank you so much. I'm Foster Brown, the co-host of the program, along with Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Kel Carson. And this week, we've had a very special three-hour program. And boy, time has flown by. I don't know about the rest of you, but I feel like there's just so much more to talk about. I hope you've enjoyed this as well. Starting on Sunday night, you'll be able to download the podcast from our homepage at internetadvisor.net. Then go to the podcast link, and you can click on it there, or go to our Facebook page, and we'll have it loaded there. And you can download the entire 3 hours and listen to them gradually, or you can take bits and pieces of it. If you go to the Internet Advisor site, you'll be able to listen to hour one and a certain segment of that, hour two and this hour three when we're talking about innovation. In studio right now, and we're wrapping up here. By the way, thank you to Eric Dorsch and Rich Luzinski and Mike Stetz, people who work behind the glass to make this program run. Thank you so much. In studio with us, of course, our usual group of suspects, Gary and the gang. And then we also have with us Amanda Lawan and Dave Anderson, who are co-founders of Bamboo Detroit, which is a co-working place, kind of like the incubator, pardon me, for innovators in Detroit. And one of those people who had been incubated there is Godwin, who's with us in studio with Yum Village.
Yep.
Do you have any projects coming up, any new pop-ups coming up?
Absolutely. We've got on the last Thursday of the month here, I believe it's the 29th, we've got a dinner upcoming at Colors Restaurant.
Okay, and I hope I get a link from you for that so people can sign up. These are very limited engagements, folks. These are special pop-up meals that the chef, who's the chef for that one?
This one is going to be a surprise. We want to try something different this time.
Okay, and how many people are going to be able to be there?
Typically, we go for about 100 to 120 people.
Okay, so relatively small, can be at a special place in Detroit, going to be a special menu for you. He will bring the menu, or she will bring the menu, and it should be wonderful. Again, thank you, Godfrey, for that. And for Yum Village, the Airbnb for chefs in the Detroit area. And again, Amanda and Dave, let me ask you this question as we look ahead. What does Detroit need right now? What do we need to move from some of the incredible stuff that you're doing, and we'll talk with one of your innovators soon, but some of the incredible stuff that you're doing to get people out there, up known, the Get Up and Go, or the Jam Jar, or Alicia Newsom's Candle Project, you know, the Detroit. She's a great kid.
Oh, she's great, yeah.
Where do you go from there to keep them not just getting on their feet, but then moving on?
Yeah,
what do we need here in Detroit?
We absolutely need more mentorship. We need people that have been successful at their businesses, that are willing to reach back to the Asian Newsoms of the world, to, you know, the Bamboos and others, to extend that the invitation to mentor and help them grow as a business.
I mean, what does it take to get those people to look? You're talking about essentially people who have left the Detroit area, very successful wherever they are, to look back, not just to look back, but to come back.
Yeah, come back, or at least, you know, share your knowledge, come out, show some support. Anytime you're in town. So like we invite a lot of these successful entrepreneurs to come speak at Bamboo Detroit. And that's been really helpful. It says, hey, you can do it. And it sort of brings these successful people down to our level and show they're real people too. They struggled. They faced failures. They've made it through it. And they've gotten to a place where their business succeeded. I think that is really important, that kind of storytelling. Really helps entrepreneurs here.
Yeah, we are actively working to establish the pipeline between, you know, Detroit and Silicon Valley or New York or Chicago, wherever there's other successful people who are originally from the Detroit area, and make it easy for them to give back.
And the good news is the guy we had on this last hour, Mike Amon, who is the Swami of San Joaquin Valley, out in Silicon Valley, was with Gary at the very beginning of one of his projects. Grew up in Jackson, and he's out there. And I heard Mike in our last hour saying he wants that. He wants to come back to the Midwest so they will and make that bridge to Silicon Valley. Because out there, he talked about unicorns, Ed, didn't he, about the billion-dollar venture. People are waiting to throw money at companies out there that are just starting up. Why won't they throw a little bit our way?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one Amanda touched on something really important, and that's the culture of failure. We need to embrace failure in this area and use it as a learning
God
tool.
God knows we've had enough of it.
yeah, no kidding. But we can't be afraid to fail.
Yeah.
You know, we have to just, you know, attack a problem with the as much rigor as possible. And if we fail, we fail, but we learn from it and we go on to and move on to the next thing.
Are we really gritty here?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Do we have that kind of rep? That people are people beginning to respect what you're doing?
Respect, or at least they're very curious. They're interested. Entrepreneurship definitely has a buzz. I mean, it was the topic of the Mackinac Policy Conference. Mayor Duggan constantly talks about it. So I think that they're curious and they want to support and follow our stories.
And Dan Gilbert,
from
Quicken Loans, right, has been buying up spaces and trying to make that kind of thing happen in this area.
That's right. Sorry, I should know better. And with new venture partners, they've invested in a lot of companies, too.
Okay.
And that's really helped. Not only so he takes and he gets the space, but then he invests in the companies so that he has somebody to occupy that space. What a great concept.
Yeah, exactly. They support, like, internal innovation. They let people pitch ideas, and sometimes they spin them off or get them the support they need.
And very collaborative with you, as well, right?
Yeah. We work well with a lot of them. Some of their startups come work at our space once in a while and work together.
I want to talk with one of your people that you innovated with, and that's Matt Gira is with us. Matt, thanks for being with us here on the Internet Advisor. I want to make sure that you get a few sentences in here in this program because we've got a lot of people here. Tell us about your innovation, Matt.
Yeah, so I'm the founder of Leo, and what our first product is a mason jar speaker we call Jam Jar.
Jam Jar. Describe that quickly for our audience.
The what?
Just describe what that is for our audience.
Yeah, so it's a canning jar that we turn into a speaker. So anything that has a headphone jack, you can play through. So right now they use auxiliary cord and works just like any other speaker that's on the market right now.
So, folks, if you can imagine a big mason jar with all the beautiful different colors that you would have, like when they put candles in and those kind of things, it's a designer kind of thing that Tina might want around the house to decorate with, Ed. But the neat thing about it is, with those bright colors, is that it's all mechanically inside. You got a radio and a speaker, right?
Yeah. I mean, we've had people think they're candles, and some it's like, but there's no in between. Either you really, really notice it, or you don't even notice it's there.
And it's a great part. It's a great part of the decor. Now, Jam, you developed this when you were in college, right?
Yeah, I'm still in college. I'm a junior at Hope right now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I developed it a year ago from now, and we're right now just working on manufacturing and starting to really go big with it.
Okay, now,
this summer.
How do you take it? We've been talking about this. How do you go from having an idea and maybe some prototypes? How do you go from there to getting it built and getting it on the market?
Yeah, so I'm mentored through the Center for Patient Leadership here at Hope. It's a really great program.
Okay, you are mentored. You're mentored through a group at Hope.
Yep. Yeah, I have a few different mentors. So we get mentored to them, and then so all summer we were, working on getting the bugs out of how to build it and more efficiently, what parts to use, what makes it better and everything. And now we're getting to the point of, okay, let's make this big and, see what we can do with it. So
that's cool. So you have precisely what Dave Anderson was talking about needing. After you get the innovation going, you've got the people who have helped you to kind of get the major things out, then you need somebody who has been in this kind of business who can help you with the practical details, and that's the mentors. And I love the fact they're part of Hope College, which is out in the Grand Rapids way.
Yeah, I mean, we have weekly meetings on Monday afternoons, and, Seth Getz, who's pretty big out here on the West Side, I think.
Excellent.
He's there to advise us, and we have great advisors that are really, they're always, hey, why don't you try this? And,
I love it. We just had a little time to tell people about that. We'll link off of our homepage to Jam Jar and to all you're doing with your site, but the very best to you in 2015.
Thank you very much. You too.
All right, Amanda, I want to thank you for being here, and Dave as well. Thanks for being in the studio, and the best to you in 2015.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for having us.
And Godwin, thank you for thank Yum you for Village and all you're doing. We'll also link to your site for that meal that's coming up. Eddie, thank you for being here.
Always great.
Been a wild weekend, and Gary, thank you. As a matter of fact, next week, we're going to bring in somebody very special.
That's right.
To talk about innovation.
Jeff DeGraff, the Dean of Innovation.
The Dean of Innovation.
He's also a professor at the U of M Business School, Ross School of Business.
All right, excellent. Folks, thank you so much. And for the rest of you out there, thank you for being part of this very special Internet Advisor. Don't forget, Sunday night, InternetAdvisor.net.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, the longest-running, locally produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.